I've had an interest in electronic health records for some time, and so when I really got the opportunity to become engaged about 4 or 5 years ago when the Office of the National Coordinator was created, I just jumped on every bandwagon I could, and I got a little bit over engaged. And so in a small state like Nebraska, many of you may be familiar with Nebraska, and usually I show a picture of Memorial Stadium with our 72,000 fans, and that's the third largest city in the state of Nebraska. And so it's a very big state, and it's a wonderful place to live. I'm just going to cover a few things for you. It'll be a different type of presentation, more practical, down to earth, but because I don't understand what most of what Dixie's talking about, that's why I need to keep her in my portfolio. But I'll talk about the federal mandate, which drives what we're doing, public health, privacy, and security challenges. And I really do appreciate the language of understanding what privacy is and what security is. That really helps to clarify a lot. Public health vision, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about our need to create a new vision, our new way of looking at public health and what it is we do. A little bit about Nebraska, the perspectives, what we've done in Nebraska. And then it won't be as much recommending policies as it will be telling a little bit of things that have helped us move ahead, and maybe will help you as well. In the federal mandate, and I'm not sure where this one came from, you understand that when the Office of the National Coordinator was created, we have had strategic plans about every year. And but this is the one I picked up because it really said what we're, in a simple way, what we're trying to do. To unify public health surveillance platforms into one uniform platform or an interoperable platform. Second strategy is streamline quality and health status monitoring. And finally, to accelerate research and dissemination of scientific data and discovery. So that's kind of the overview of what we're supposed to be doing in public health. When we develop a vision, and a lot of my work has been on visioning and on developing where we're going to be going and where you want to be, it's very important to understand what your purpose is. Now, that's very important in this whole thing of health reform and public health. So some of our staff, our purpose is to keep my HIV system running and to make sure nobody gets into it. And you have to understand that when you're trying to break into their system and make it talk. And you need to understand the complexities involved with that. You need to understand the past, both of public health, but probably more than that of healthcare as a whole. Think positively about the future, expand your potential to think. Most of us think within a very narrow framework. And plan strategically and focus on the future. Very important things. So as we move ahead, traditional public health practice has been systematic, ongoing data collection. We all do that. We've done it for years. Sometimes our data is 2 years old. I've talked to a number of you about this. When I finally get our outcome data from some of our measuring tools, it's already 6 months old if it's hospital outcome data, and it's only 60%, and that's only 60% of the payer population, not 60% of the population. So we really have a really limited data set. But it's systematic, ongoing. We do analysis, interpretation. We disseminate that. We make all sorts of charts. You can go to any state's website, public health website, and look at the charts. They're just wonderful. We extend that to the practitioners as well as to our public. And then we link public health practice to our research, hopefully, as we create an improved outcome for the future. When we understand the past, work with the present, focus on the future, the whole concept is to have your feet on both sides of this so you're moving ahead. And I hope you saw this. Robert Klopner did an excellent job, I think, this morning in giving us a view of where we are. I love the curve and where we're going. And I think sometimes you've got to see that. Just got through talking with one of our people that has a computer brain that works with us in Hitsby. And I said, are we really making headway? And every once in a while, I need someone to come back to me and say, yes, we are. So in spite of the pushback on different areas, we are making headway. But in the past, our public health process has been program-centric, you all know this, driven by funding, and that funding then diminishes, and then we stop supporting what we're doing quite so well. You know, what's the latest one on this? Probably West Nile, right? I think our West Nile finally went away, pandemic flu went away this year, so all the programs that we built around those things, either we contribute to or they go away. Our systems are non-compatible. Now you do understand that. And they were designed to be non-compatible because we're a free country where people like to earn money by making systems that are non-compatible so you can buy their system every year. Who are the two leaders in that? Apple and Microsoft, or Apple and IBM, right? Non-compatible. So finally, Apple is now compatible in some ways, and it's a market-driven economy. Non-compatible data, it's the biggest thing we had to face in HITSPE was, coming up with definitions or data that means the same things in different enterprise systems, and it's a real challenge. And then non-compatible language, that goes back to the very basis of healthcare. When someone diagnoses somebody and says, you've got such and such a disease, if that means a different thing to another practitioner, we got a problem. Well, what language was medicine practiced in for centuries? What did my grandpa, who's a doctor, tell me? You need to take Latin, David. You take Latin. And why do you do in Latin? So your patients can't understand what you're talking about, and they think you know more. And then what have we done in recent language confusion? What do? You code it. Why do you code it? Well, it's easier to be readable by electronic means, right? That's why we do it. That's the popular market piece. But I tell you what, when the code is not available to the public, the coding is to keep that language separate and private so that there's a profit margin built into that. Language is a huge issue. And so the language transition is big for us. In the future, it's going to be person-centric. And this is a hard thing for public health to understand because we deal with populations. If you don't initially collect the data from a person and it's linked to a person, you can never relink that to a person. It needs to be person-centric. Let me give you an example of how this was a challenge in Nebraska. We have the NED system, electronic laboratory reporting. Well, one of the challenges was that we didn't have a patient name with that. It was a doctor who ordered it, and when it came off the billing side, we did a filtering system off the billing side to get reportable diseases. So we had a patient positive thing. Oh, we did have a patient name. We didn't have a patient address. We only had the physician address. And so we had no way of do geospatial organization, no way of sending it to the local health department for follow-up unless we did some follow-back to the physician. The physician had to call us back, tell us what it was. Then we had to put it into a database to give it to the local health department to follow up public health reporting. But had it been person-centric, and why wasn't it person-centric on the lab system? It's the same lab system, right? Well, the patient entry side had the patient demographics. The billing side, where we extrapolated the results, does not have the patient demographics because they're not billing the patient. Just a report outside. So the computer system itself within the system did not talk to itself on both sides. So we had to do integration to make that happen, or we're working on that. Again, we're going to be driven by funding. I don't care what you say, and if there's nothing you learned from this conference at all, you need to look at the dollar flow behind each of these initiatives. And you need to be aware of that because that's what helps us understand how we're going to make change. Systems have to be compatible. They don't have to be the same, but they have to talk. Data has to be compatible, and we have to use language compatibility. There's got to be some transition. So part of that is one of the latest things that the funding streams was to identify what five terms, that I think we paid $5 million to come up with the definition of electronic health records. I got those already, but they didn't want to pay me that one. Anyway, what's the status of the health systems? Again, we began the stovepipe systems involving the degrees of integration. That's where we are right now. We are doing things, and some of you have done an awful lot with this. It's exciting to see what's happening. Generally, data is still one-directional. With new standards, the options exist for greater bi-directional communication. And what we've worked on with HITSPE is standards to make sure that we can re-identify the de-identified data that is there. So those standards are in place. Generally, the programs remain program or population-centric. This is important. Public health is controlled by the states. The funding, of course, comes out of CDC, but what you do with it is a state and local option. Post-event reporting, we are still very much post-event reporting. And I'm a little concerned about that. We've done a few things in Nebraska. It's like BioSense, but it's not. It's we worked with Offutt Air Force Base Strategic Air Command, put together a BioSense similar thing. We don't have a lot of BioSense hospitals in Nebraska, and so there's not a lot of stuff coming out. But we have influenza surveillance that goes to the hospitals. We have absenteeism surveillance for the schools. We have absenteeism surveillance for the major employers. And that combined with our laboratory data, we were able to put an early alert system demo through combination of Peter Kiewit, University of Omaha, Peter Kiewit Center, IT Development, and STRATCOM, Strategic Air Command in Offutt, and then the State of Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. And so I think we came up with really a neat little thing that, you know, this map shows the state, and when something turns yellow, you know, you got to go follow up what the issue is. And is it absenteeism at a school? It went beyond a certain amount or whatever. But a nice little program that we looked at and we developed as a sample to get away from post-event reporting and to really come to more current, real-time events, just like BioSense is trying to do. And then funding and outbreak-driven. We maintain, continue to have public health programs that are driven by funds. And if there's an outbreak, you can expect to get funds. You know, if we have something that happens nationally with a major outbreak, we're going to see funding again. That's just, that's how it works. I've used this, just this is was my department at the state for a while, our surveillance section. And trying to show people that lived in a box by themselves, this is one of those, that we actually, because of CDC regulations, had to have her in a closed room with a standalone system that didn't communicate with any other system to actually do HIV surveillance. And they paid for it for us to do that. But realizing that we've got to have two-way communication between all of these, and all of these things work together. Certainly, we do well with codes and EMS trauma. We have electronic ambulance system, and the Image Trend sponsors for us. So we get real-time data coming in from that, as well as many of our other things. But you can see the importance of having integration of the data pieces. Now, I've added to this something that's really big in Nebraska, vital records, both birth and death records, registries. We have the only state with Parkinson's registry, and of course we're adding, we have the other registries that most states have, including immunization, which is a huge one. Surveys and chronic disease are things that we do in silos as well. I wanted to give you just a minute to think about, and this is something you ought to do on your own when you get a chance, if you had no constraints, given what you want to do, and what would you create, and what would you do? This is part of the visioning process, and when I do this with a health IT and public health, I envision person-centric. Everything we have is patient-focused and person-focused. Real-time data collection, real-time extraction and analysis. Can you imagine? Person-centric, privacy maintained, and that's where I think that attaching the consent model or pieces to that would really be helped, so that we can actually, within the framework of the law, maintain person's privacy. Direct data integration. In a sense, it's readable. And I just put this in a sense to say, we don't want an intermediary person. I don't want to have to hire coders and decoders. I don't want to have to hire programmers and deprogrammers to be able to let the public understand the information, or even my practitioners, my public health program managers. It needs to be usable. And I have a sample of what we've done with this in our NEDS program. We had an outbreak of whooping cough, you know, a couple of years ago that we really tracked. We were able to use a programmer to create a very complex analysis pattern that went in and grabbed the data and put it into forms that our public, local public health could actually use. But you don't need to have everybody be a SAS programmer. You need to be people to understand what they do and have the resources to do that work. Very important. We need to see an improvement in population health. I mean, if we can't see a return on investment, then we don't deserve to have the money. We need to see improvements, and I really want to do this. It needs to be a seamless integration with the personal health care system. That's a real challenge, and because this is a moving border, what is public health and personal health, moves with a variety of things. Really, reimbursements, a big issue, but also the chronic disease outbreaks and a variety of things. The knowledge repository, and I think this is really key. This is where it comes back to what Vicki talked about this morning and what we've done in the Public Health Data Standards Consortium, creating the PRISM tool. PRISM is one of these that allows us to have a cross-integration with a tool that tells us what you can and cannot do legally. I mean, I don't know what the laws are in Rhode Island, and if I want to send a record to Rhode Island, who do I call? Well, ideally, we have a knowledge base that sits in the background behind our EHR system that when I push that button to send that to Rhode Island, disclaimer comes up that said, when you transfer personal health information to Rhode Island, you need a consent permission signed by the, and it needs to be signed here. You sign that and the electronic record goes. You don't need to have a lawyer in your pocket. You need to have a lawyer help you put that together. And this is a piece of the knowledge base repository that sits in the background and works. Right now we're looking at the PRISM tool, gives us the information. You still have to go look at it, make your decision, decide what to do. But eventually we can see the future when we put this into the health, into the system. I won't talk much about that, but pre-HIPAA, you know, those before that happened, I'm really glad we brought that, you brought that up, that it's more than, it's portability. The idea was to provide your ability to get your record and take it with you. And that's more important now than ever. There were freedoms and constraints and failures prior to that, and that's why it was enacted in 74. Present situation with privacy security challenges. We have a lot of information, maybe too much. A lot of doctors feel like the consumer has too much information when they come to them with a disease they want to be diagnosed with or a medication they want to be given. And so their access and overload may be high. I think we get used to that. There are technology challenges with the HIPAA because it was designed for paper, and so many state laws were designed for paper, and so that has to be overcome, but we're doing that. One thing I wanted to bring up is loss of border control. Laws, privacy security laws, are hampered by laws state to state, but electrons don't stop at the state border. You know, there's this concept among our governors, and it's something we really need to work with, that I can put legislation in that keeps those trucks from, or I can tax whatever comes in and out of my state. Well, this is different with electronic health records. People are gonna take their health care to where they want it done. And that's what travel health is all about. And that's why people are leaving the United States to get health care, because of that. Border control, state and federal border control. Excuse me. So what about tomorrow? Tomorrow is our choice, what we want to do. We can really make a difference. I think there's a lot more to be done in terms of political decisions, but we need a national public health vision, and I think we're starting to get that. So in Nebraska, we've done these things. We created and encouraged communication among all of our partners, especially our health information exchanges. We have four that are up and moving. Many states have one, so we have a little bit more work to do. We foster adoption of all types of health information exchanges, so my ImageTrend electronic ambulance running reports, we encourage that. We bring the registries in. I just sat down with our immunization registry person and said, by the way, we need to talk. We need to get that information. We created a backbone as part of our telehealth network. We have established a telehealth network across the state of Nebraska. Every hospital has a video conferencing unit. Every public health department has a video conferencing unit. And I've got about five or six in the state office building, about 10 in the state office building. But that backbone creates a data exchange backbone. A virtual private network that if we wanted to, we wouldn't have to be on the web, and if we wanted to, we could actually use that backbone to exchange data. Very important. In the first HSPIC plan, we did not get funding, but we had a HSPIC committee made up of attorneys and state workers and a variety of things. We were able to remove the barriers and look at regulations in our laws. We did that. We continue to do that, and we continue to do the education of our workers, our citizens. Even today. And currently this is what we're doing with privacy and security. We have the HSPIC committee is still working on those two things, legal review and education. We're a member of a 10-state collaborative, the standards collaborative that's looking at audit and authentication and coming up with a bridge that we think every state can use to agree to use for audit and authentication for electronic health records. I'm working on Public Health Data Standards Consortium. We're engaged in the FIN, and we're trying to stay current with FIN changes and standards, and we're doing okay, I think. We have more work to do. We're a member of the National Governors Association Best Practices Privacy Security Task Force, and we have one of our CEOs of our hospitals who is on that e-health council, or that, not e-health council, what's it?
State Alliance.
And one of our hospitals is a fully a paperless hospital, and he's the CEO of that hospital. And then we're also members on the Health Information Technology Standards Panel. We're a voting member. We're the only public health, only state public health voting member on that panel. So if you are interested in becoming engaged in any of these things, I would suggest some of those those issues, some things you can do. We've made changes in our laws and regulations. We have more to do. We're working on that. I encourage people to invest in systems, and I have a lot of physician practice groups that come to me and say, what should I do? Well, first of all, you have to make sure your system meets the CCHIT and standards. Really, that's really what you've got to do. Oftentimes, I tell them, wait about 6 months because I want to show you a demo that we're going to be doing, and we'll have more of a demo. Invest in systems that do more, and by that I mean, if what you need is a good billing system, don't buy just a good billing system. Realize that you have got to have a complete system that tracks and exchanges electronic medical records. You want the whole pie, even if you're not going to use the whole pie right now. So you need to have something that's going to do more than what you want now. You need to think ahead. Think long range, think strategically, think big picture. Practice inclusive integration. I just came up with that. I don't know what it means. No, I do know what it means. It means our practice in the past for public health and for health care has been to exclude people from our party. You know, when I was in hospital administration, I served my docs who we got, and I recruited docs to my hospital because docs brought patients. And I did everything I could to get those docs, keep them happy and to bring patients. But it was exclusive. We need to change our thinking so that we practice inclusive integration. If you think someone's going to challenge you in terms of your ability to get your money or exchange data or those kind of things, and so you're going to keep them from becoming integrated, you're in the wrong park. You're in the wrong business. We need to practice inclusive integration of all our data systems, of all our data sources, of all our providers, and not exclude people because of proprietary or funding reasons. I think that's a real challenge we face. And I'm just going to end with that. Any comments? I'm sorry. I hope I didn't go too long with this. I'd be glad to talk with anybody at a later time if you have questions about what we've done or what we can do. Thank you.